The sun sets on another spring night in Wisconsin, and this is Old Time Radio Drama. Good evening, I'm Norman Gilliland. We'll have our Name That Sound contest in just a moment, and also on the bill of fare tonight between now and 11 o'clock, The Challenge of the Yukon from 1946. We'll stop by Duffy's Tavern for something that approaches an opera with Ed Wynn. In a broadcast from 1949, we'll have Damon Runyon Theater. And Philip Marlowe with a story called The Face to Forget from 1950 at about 10 o'clock. Another strange story from the clock. It's called Bad Dreams. It comes from 1948. And from CBS Radio Workshop at about 10:30, something called I Have Three Heads. Find out what that's about in a broadcast from 50 years ago last night. First, though, to our Name That Sound contest. We never know if they're easy or hard. That's, I guess, up to you. But I'll give you the sound, and you'll have, during our first feature tonight, Challenge of the Yukon, to call in with your answer. And we'll draw from the names of all correct respondents to see who wins tonight's Old Time Radio Night t-shirt, the brand new 2007 edition. So, here we go. Name that sound, and you can call 1-800-642-1234 if you think you can identify the sound. And Cale will be taking your call back there in the booth. Here's the sound. That phone number again, 1-800-642-1234, if you can name that sound. Here it is again. Well, it's very colorful, whatever it is, and see what you can make of it. While we head north to the Yukon, and a story about a very special dog owner, and some down-on-their-luck gamblers who try to set him up. Our story is called Balmy Bill, and it comes to us from May 2nd, 1946. What is that sound?
The Challenge of the Yukon! It's King, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the North Country, blazing the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
On King! On, you Huskies!
Gold! Gold discovered in the Yukon! A stampede to the Klondike in the greedy race for riches. Now back to the days of the gold rush, when Sergeant Preston and his wonder dog King battled through storm and snow to preserve law and order as they met the Challenge of the Yukon. They called him Balmy Bill. He was old and harmless and as simple as a child, and the only thing that mattered to him was his old dog, Barnaby, who followed him about in the Silver Dollar Cafe, where Bill swept the floor and cleaned the cuspidors in exchange for his board and room. Bill had been successful once, but they said he got lost in a Yukon blizzard, and after that, his mind went blank. Barnaby had brought him home. But that was long ago, when the dog was young and strong. Now, Barnaby was happy to doze beside the stove during the evenings, while Bill sat nearby watching the prospectors in the cafe.
Hello there, Bill. Yeah? How are you tonight?
Oh, hello.
How's old Barnaby these days, Bill?
Well, he's just the same.
It's getting colder out. You better see that that stove keeps burning.
Oh, I will. I always keep it going.
Say, there's Dan Beecher and Bob over at that table. Come on, they're starting to play poker. Let's get in the game.
Well, see you later, Bill. Take care of Barnaby.
Oh, I will.
I sure hope my luck holds out tonight. We could use the money.
Yeah, getting pretty low myself.
Well, dealing, Bob. Well, I feel lucky tonight, boys, so watch out.
Remember what happened the last time you said that?
Hello, boys.
Wait for us, boys.
Hey, get a couple of chairs.
Yeah, sit over here. Yeah.
Thanks.
Say, Bob, I hear you're planning to leave us.
Yeah, I'm going back to the States again.
Yes, I'm buying him out. I think it's a dirty trick leaving me after we've been partners for so many years.
Well, if you had any sense, you'd come with me, Dan. You're rich enough now.
Not quite, Bob. That claim of ours is too good to give up yet.
Yeah.
I'll get to the States just about the time you go broke. And then you'll be sorry you were in such a rush.
I sure wish Pete and I had a claim instead of working in the bank.
Maybe if you'd save your money and not gamble so darn much, Jed. You and Pete could buy a gold claim.
Yeah. Don't you worry, Dan. We're going to take some of that hard-earned gold of yours away from you right now.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, deal them out, boys. That's right.
It was almost morning when Pete Holt and Jed Wilson got back to their small cabin. They both looked glum as they undressed for bed.
Well, Bob sure cleaned us out tonight.
He was lucky, that's all.
Lucky or not, it sure puts us in a bad spot. When Jameson comes home from his trip and finds out we borrowed a few thousand from his bank, we're going to be in a mess.
He won't be back for a week.
Well, what are we going to do? Go out and pick gold nuggets off the spruce trees to get it back?
We'll get it back. We can't be unlucky all the time.
You mean we're going to take more money from the bank?
What else can we do? Would you rather go to jail?
But, Pete, we're in way over our heads now.
It's our only chance, Jed. If we're caught now, we go to jail for grand larceny anyway. Our luck will change. It has to.
I wish we'd never started this.
Don't waste your time wishing. Maybe tomorrow night the picture will change.
You've said that every day for 2 weeks.
Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police stopped his dog team in front of Dan's cabin the following morning. With his big dog King beside him, the Mountie started for the door just as Dan opened it and came out of the cabin carrying a dish of food.
Why, hello there, Preston. How are you?
I'm fine, Dan. I heard Bob was leaving the Yukon soon. That right?
Yep, that's right. I'm buying out his share of a gold claim. He's leaving in about a week.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. Thought I'd better stop and say goodbye, but if he's going to be here a week, I'll see plenty of him before he goes.
Sure you will. Say, did you know Bessie had two fine pups?
No, I didn't. That what the food's for?
Yeah. Come on back and see him.
All right.
Just going to feed her. They're the best pup she ever had.
Good for old Bessie. No, King, you stay here, boy.
Well, here we are.
Hold your horses, old girl. I'm coming.
You're hungry, aren't you? Here, Sergeant Preston, look at your young'uns. Eat your breakfast. I'd better close this door.
Hello, little fellas. Say, these are fine pups, Dan.
They sure are. I don't think there's anything cuter than a Malamute pup. Just little balls of fur.
This one's a beauty. You know, these will make fine sled dogs someday. There you go, little fella. Get back there with your brother.
Well, I have to be careful to keep this door shut. Those pups are getting lively.
Had your breakfast yet?
I have, but Bob's still sleeping. He was a heavy winner at the Silver Dollar last night. He didn't get home till darn near morning.
Oh.
Say, by the way, I'm giving a big farewell party for him the night before he leaves. Our cabin is too small, so I'm giving it at the Silver Dollar. It's next Saturday. Can you come?
Why, yes, I'll be back by then. This is my last trip with the dog team. The snow's just about gone, and I'll be on horseback.
That means less work for King, doesn't it?
Not much, Dan. He runs along with me. I couldn't do without him.
Well, don't forget the party. Everyone's coming.
I won't, Dan. Thanks a lot. All right, King. Let's go, boy.
On, King! On!
It was late the next afternoon when Pete Holt and Jed Wilson walked toward the Silver Dollar Cafe. The sun had melted away the last of the snow, and the door of the cafe was open. Balmy Bill sat in the doorway, staring off into space.
Nobody will be in the Silver Dollar yet. We can talk better there.
There's old Balmy Bill. Hey, what's wrong with him?
Why? Looks as if he's crying. Yeah, look, tears running down his face. Hello, Bill.
You talking to me?
Who did you think? What's wrong with you? You got something in your eye?
No, nothing's in my eye.
You feel bad about something?
Yeah.
What's the matter?
My dog, it's Barney Bill.
Where is he?
Huh? Why, he's gone.
Did he run away or something?
Oh, no, Barney Bill would never run away.
Well, what happened to him?
Why, he died.
Died?
Yeah, he just didn't wake up.
Well, for Pete's sake, the wonder he lived this long.
But he was all mine. I could pet him and talk to him. He followed me around.
You can get another dog. You ought to get yourself a nice little pup.
A nice little pup? Oh, yes, that would be fine. A little pup that I could pet. A nice, soft little pup, eh?
Dogs cost money up here. You haven't got much money, have you, Bill?
Money? No, I haven't any money. But I'd like to have a puppy. A nice, soft little puppy that I could pet. And he'd be all mine.
Come on, Jed. We can't waste time.
Well, maybe we'll get you a pup, Bill. Sometime.
Hey, Jed, I want to talk to you.
I'm coming.
A nice little puppy. He'd be all mine.
There's a table off in the corner. If anyone comes in, they won't bother us.
Hello, boys.
Hi, Barney. We'll order something later. We want to talk a while.
All right.
Let's sit here.
Yeah. Are we going to play again tonight?
Are you crazy? Of course we're going to play. Our luck started to change last night. We'd be crazy not to take advantage of it. From now on, Jed, we're going to clean up. We'll take last night's winnings and some more from the bank for a backlog.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, quiet. This is Dan Beecher coming over here. Hello, Dan.
Why, hello, boys.
Hello, Dan.
Just dropped in to see if there's anybody here who hadn't heard about the farewell party I'm giving for Bob Saturday night.
Yeah, Bob said something about it last night.
You two are coming, aren't you? Just about everybody in town will be there.
Well, sure we'll come. We wouldn't miss it.
When's Bob leaving?
Well, he's taking off Monday morning. He figures he better take a day to rest after the party. But I'll see you boys before then. I'll have to get some money out of the bank Saturday to pay Bob off for his share of my claims.
Hey, that's right. You're buying him out, aren't you?
Yep. It'll sure put a hole in my bank account, but I figure the claim's worth it.
You better put that money away somewhere. Bob likes to gamble. If he brings it with him Saturday night, he probably won't have it when he leaves on Monday.
Don't worry, I won't let him bring it here. And from what I hear about you two, you could profit something that same advice. Leave your own money home for change.
Yes, you're right, Dan. Maybe you're right.
Saturday morning, Pete and Jed looked worried as they opened the bank for the business of the day.
Well, we're in for it now. You and your fancy ideas are getting our money back.
Yeah, it was rotten luck. I was going good last night at first, and it all went blooey.
I don't see why you had to play Pharaoh. That really took you. My luck was bad right from the beginning.
Well, there's no use crying about it. We got to figure something out.
There's just nothing we can do. Jameson will be back here Monday, and we got over $3,000 of the bank's money. All we can figure is we're going to jail.
Quiet. Here comes somebody.
It's only Bobby Bill. What's he want?
Hello, boys.
Hello, Bill. What do you want? Got some money to put in the bank?
Well, I ain't got any money. I just came to see if you've got that puppy yet.
Puppy? What puppy?
Hey, the little soft puppy for me to have and pet. The one that you was going to get for me to be all mine.
I didn't promise to get you a dog.
He said he would.
Who, Jed? I didn't hear him say anything about getting you one.
You misunderstood me, Bill. I said you should have one, a pup.
Yes, that's what I want, a puppy, like you said. Just a little one that'll be all mine. Like Barnaby, only little, maybe, and he'd be...
Yeah, I know, he'd be all yours.
Yes, he'd be all mine.
Well, we don't keep him in banks. We're out of them today.
Here comes a customer, Bill. You better go.
But if you do get me one, I'll sweep your floor out.
All right. I'll see you some other time.
Well, hello, Bill.
Hello.
How are you, Dan? Getting ready for the party tonight?
Sure. You and Jed are coming, aren't you?
We wouldn't miss it.
Well, I've got to get that money for Bob today. Paid him off from a claim.
Sure, Dan. How much do you want?
Well, I got my check here. It's $10,000.
Wow. Bob can sure have fun with all of that.
Well, he's taken more than that out of that gold claim himself. I figure it's worth that much. He hasn't shown much sign of giving out.
I'll get the money for you.
What time's your party start, Dan?
Well, the boys will get there about 8 o'clock, I guess.
It'll be a big night at the Silver Dollar.
About everyone in town's coming.
Here's the money, Dan. You better keep this and give it to Bob tomorrow.
Don't worry. That's just what I'm going to do. Thanks. I've got a good place to hide it. I guess you know where, Pete. You helped me bring those bags of gold over here when I started my bank account.
That's why I put it all in that bag. I figured that's what you'd do.
Well, get there early, boys.
Right.
You know us. We'll be the first ones there and the last to leave. This bank's closed on Sunday, you know.
See you tonight.
I wish somebody was giving us $10,000.
Jed, I got an idea.
What?
Go on over and bring Balmy Bill back here right now.
Balmy Bill?
What for? Hurry up and get him. You'll find out what for after you bring him back here. Hello, Bill.
He said you wanted to see me. Have you got the puppy?
I told you he didn't have the puppy.
No, I haven't, Bill. But
Maybe I'll get you one.
You will? Oh, good. Will he be a little one, a soft one that I can get?
Yeah, any kind you want. But you'll have to do something for us first.
Oh, I will. I'll do anything. I'll sweep your floors. What color will he be?
Any color you want. But you have to promise that you won't tell anybody.
Oh, I won't. Not if you say I shouldn't.
Pete, where are you going to get up?
Never mind. Now, Bill.
Hmm?
Before I get you a pup, you have to do just what I tell you.
Sure, sure.
You know where Dan Beecher lives?
Dan Beecher?
He's the big man with the black beard. He plays cards at the Silver Dollar.
Is he the man who owns Bessie?
Bessie? That's Dan's dog, Pete.
Yeah. He's the one.
Sure, I know where he lives. He brought Bessie to the Silver Dollar once, and he let me watch her for him. And then I saw him another time with Bessie going into the cabin the way out on the trail.
That's the cabin, north on the trail. Well, tonight, I want you to go to his cabin and get something for me.
Sure, I'll get it.
Now, listen. Nobody will be in the cabin. If the door's locked, you'll have to break in the window.
Pete, you mean you're going to ask Bill?
Quiet, Jed. I don't think the door will be locked. Then you go inside and find the big wood box beside the stove.
The wood box where they keep wood for the stove?
That's right. Like yours beside the stove at the Silver Dollar.
Yes, I know.
Move the box aside and you'll find a trap door. It's in the floor under the box.
A trap door?
Yeah.
Well, I can do it. I'm strong. I can move the box even if it's full of wood.
Good. Now, when you open the trap door, you will see a bag like this one. You see?
Yes, a bag just like that one.
It'll be full of metal, so it'll be heavy.
Oh, but I'm strong. I can carry it.
Sure you can. Then you bring the bag up to Ridge Rock. You know where that is?
Oh, yes, but I could bring it here to the bank.
I don't want you to bring it here. If you do, I won't give you the puppy.
Oh, then I won't. I want a puppy. A nice little one that I can...
Now, listen to me. You know where Ridge Rock is?
Oh, yes. It's that big rock up on the mountain trail. You can look away down at the river. You know, I used to go up there with Barnaby. Barnaby liked
now,
it.
All right, now listen to me. The minute you get that heavy bag, go straight to Ridge Rock and stay there. Don't come back until I get there. You understand?
Are you going to bring the puppy up there?
Yes, and if you're not there, you won't get the puppy.
Oh, I'll wait for you. If you're going to bring the puppy, I'll wait all night.
And don't tell anybody about this or you won't get the puppy.
Oh, I won't tell anybody.
Now, run along now. I'll see you later at the Silver Dollar.
Well, I'm going to call the puppy Barnaby. You know, Barnaby would like that. We can have a watch.
Pete, you're taking an awful chance.
You're crazy. How can we miss?
He'll probably tell somebody.
He won't. He wants that puppy too much.
Well, where are we going to get a puppy?
You loco. We aren't going to take a puppy to him.
Well, he'll tell on us then. He'll tell what we did.
He won't be able to tell.
Pete, what do you mean?
Barney Bill is going to fall over the cliff accidentally. It's a 300-foot drop where the river cuts through the mountains.
Pete, that's murder.
All right, I'll do the pushing if you're squeamish. We've got to get that money back in the bank before Jameson gets here Monday.
Yeah, but Peter, if we're caught, you know...
We won't be caught. We'll have perfect alibis. We'll be right at the Silver Dollar all night with Dan and Bob. We'll get there before they come tonight and stay right beside them until they leave. Nobody could possibly suspect us.
Yeah, but getting the money from Balmy Bill...
There's no snow, Jed. He won't leave any tracks. Now, we'll wait until late in the morning. Then we'll start out on a hunting trip to the mountains, and we'll go by way of Ridge Rock. We'll get the money, get rid of Bill, and come back late tomorrow night, after the hunt.
Nobody missed old Bill as he slipped quietly out of the side door of the Silver Dollar just before midnight. The street was deserted as he walked to the edge of town, and no one saw him enter Dan's cabin.
Open the trap door and take the heavy bag and go to Ridge Rock and wait. Move the wood box and... There it is, beside the stove, just like he said. I'll put the lantern here. And move the wood box. There's the trap door. And the heavy bag in. Now, go to Ridge Rock and wait and wait. And then I'll get my puppy. A nice, soft little puppy. And he'll be all mine. Where's my lantern? Oh, there it is. Now to Ridge Rock. Go to Ridge Rock and wait and get the soft little puppy. It's a dog back here in the woodshed. I wonder what kind of a dog. I wonder. Hello. Hey, you're Bessie, the dog I watched for the man in the silver dollar that day, huh? Oh, puppies. Two of them. Little soft puppies. Here, let me hold you. Oh, wait, I'll put this lantern down. Oh, so little. Well, you'd fit right in my pockets. One on each side, huh? Here, you see? I'm going to take you with me to Ridge Rock, and I'll have three puppies in, and they'll all love me, and they'll all be mine, too. No, Bessie, you can't come. You stay in here. Now, don't worry. I won't hurt them. I'll love them and take care of them. Go to Ridge Rock with the heavy bag and wait. These little puppies will be nice little puppies.
Dawn came early in the Yukon country in the spring, and it was broad daylight as Dan and Bob walked toward their cabin after the farewell party. Bob was in a sentimental mood.
Old acquaintance be forgotten.
You've had quite an evening for yourself. Well, here's the cabin. You're going to get some sleep.
Who's that?
It's King and Sergeant Preston on his horse. Good morning, Sergeant.
Oh, boy. Well, you two just getting home from the party?
Hi there, Sergeant Preston. Hey, you shouldn't have left so early last night. You missed the best part of the party.
I wanted to get an early start today.
Well, come on in, Sergeant. Have a farewell cup of coffee with Bob.
Sure, come on in. We're going to have breakfast now so as we won't have to get up so early.
Yes, I will have a cup of coffee, will you? Easy, fella.
Yeah, I better go back and let Bessie out for a while. She hears us. I'll be with you in a minute. You start the water boiling, Bob.
All right, Dan.
Come on, King. Come on, boy.
Sergeant, I'll make you the best cup of coffee you ever... Hey, what is this? The wood box moved and the trap door opened.
What? Is that where you kept your money?
Yes, and it's gone. The money that Dan took from the bank yesterday. Dan! Dan, come here!
I'm coming.
Are you sure the money's gone?
Oh, yes, it was here last night.
Hey, somebody stole those two cups of Bessie's. They're gone.
That's not all that's gone. Somebody stole the money out of the hiding place.
What, the money?
Now, why would anyone bother with two puppies?
That's why Bessie was barking so. There's no snow, so there aren't any tracks around the woodshed. But they couldn't have got out. The door was shut.
So there's no way of trailing the person who did it.
Did anyone know the money was here, Dan?
Pete Holt knew it. But he was at the party with us all night. We just left him and Jed about a half hour ago. It couldn't have been Pete or Jed.
If the thief had only left something behind, King could trail him.
Well, he didn't. There's nothing in the woodshed and nothing here with his scent on it.
I know. Bessie.
What?
What about Bessie?
Is she still in the woodshed?
No. When I opened the door, she went hightailing through the woods. Didn't even want a breakfast.
It's too bad you let her go.
What do you mean, Sergeant?
If the thief took Bessie's pups, Bessie will find him. She'll trail those pups of hers to the ends of the earth.
You are right, Preston. I shouldn't have let her go.
There's only one thing we can do now.
What?
I'll put King on Bessie's trail. Come on. We'll start at the woodshed where he can get her scent. I'll leave my horse here and put King on leash. Come on, King.
Balmy Bill sat high up on the mountain trail beside a huge boulder called Ridge Rock. A soft wind played with his long gray hair as, smiling happily, he bent over the tiny, squirming pups that he held gently in his lap.
Oh, now, don't cry like that. I guess maybe you're hungry. Well, never you mind. Pete will come soon, and then I'll take you back to where I live and feed you. Oh, what's that? Why, It's the mother dog. She followed us. Well, now, ain't that nice? She can give you some breakfast, huh? Come on. Right here in this place back of the rock, eh? Yeah, now, never mind. I'm gonna let you have your babies. There you are. Now you two can eat. And I'll go back and wait for Pete.
We should have got here sooner, Pete. Maybe old Bobby Bill got tired of waiting.
He had to let people know we were going hunting, so nobody would suspect. There's a crazy old coot sitting back against the rock. I knew he'd be here.
I hope he got the money.
Hello, Bill.
Huh? Oh, hello, boys.
Did you bring the bag with you?
Yes, just like you said. Here it is. It's heavy.
That's the bag, all right. Here, Jed, take it.
Yeah, it's the money, all right.
Money? What money? Did you bring me the puppy? Where is he? You said you'd bring me
Bill,
a puppy.
Did you ever look over the edge of the trail here? You can see the river.
Oh, no, I don't like to look down there. It's so far down, it makes me feel funny. Where's the puppy?
Come over here and look down. I'll hold on to you so you won't...
No, I don't want to look over the edge. I won't go near it.
Oh, yes, you will. Come on, get up. Come on, you.
No, please, I don't want to fall over the edge. Let me go.
Dan and Sergeant Preston, with King on leash, were coming up the mountain trail. King had no difficulty following the fresh scent of Bessie and tugged at the leash in his eagerness to go faster. Then, suddenly, the Mountie heard a cry around the bend of the trail ahead.
That sounds like Balmy Bill.
I can't get there fast enough, I'm afraid. Wait, King. I'll unleash you. Go ahead, fella. Get him, King. Stop him, boy.
Like a flash of gray lightning, the huge dog sped up the mountain trail. As he rounded the bend, he saw Pete pulling and tugging at Balmy Bill, hitting the old man as he struggled to hold back.
Come on, I can't hold him, Pete.
Get the dog.
The great dog sprang at Pete, hurling him to the ground. Jed raised his gun.
I'll get him, Pete.
Oh,
in pain.
It's Jed and Pete. We shot Jed, Sergeant.
See if he's hurt badly, Dan.
Take this dog off of me.
All right, King, back, fella. But watch him, boy. Get up, Pete. You're not hurt.
You shot Jed in the arm, Preston. He's still alive. Oh.
They were going to throw me over the edge. He was trying to push me over.
What are you doing here, Bill?
They told me to get the bag for them from under the floor. Oh. They said they'd bring me a puppy if I did. But they didn't bring it.
So, Pete, it wasn't enough to commit a robbery. You had to plan murder, too.
Here's the money, Sergeant.
It was Bobby Bill who stole it, not me.
Bill didn't even know what it was.
Well, I found two puppies anyway. Even if he didn't bring one like he said he would, the mother dog's giving them their breakfast. They're beside the rock.
All right, Bill.
He's right, Sergeant. Bessie's here for the two pups.
Better bring them along, Dan. I'll have a look at Jed's arm.
They didn't do what they said they would.
Let's see your arm, Jed.
It wasn't my idea to murder Bill. Pete was the one that planned it.
Shut up, you.
Watch it, Pete. King's guarding you. You can walk, Jed. Get up.
Come on.
Here are the pups.
They didn't bring me a puppy. If these are yours, then I won't have one.
You're going to get a puppy, Bill. You can have your choice of these two.
Eh?
It's all right with Sergeant Preston.
You take your pick, Bill, and go on ahead with the pups, Bessie.
Give them to me. I'll carry them. This one is the one I want. He looks just like Barnaby. If Barnaby was little. I'm going to call you Barnaby.
That was nice of you, Dan. Those are valuable pups.
Well, not as valuable as the money in this bag.
Dan, we had to have some money. We were in a jam.
That's enough out of you, Pete. You and Jed are under arrest for robbery and attempted murder. Get going. I'm taking you back to town. Watch them, King. Thanks to you, this case is closed. Thank you.
Challenge of the Yukon, a copyrighted feature, is brought to you each week at this time, and all characters, names, and incidents used are fictitious. Listen again next week to another exciting adventure during the days of the Gold Rush. L. Prowl speaking. This program came to you from Detroit. What's marriage without a father-in-law? In Willie Piper's case, it would probably be perfect bliss. Willie is the bashful, long-suffering hero of the Willie Piper Show, on the air every Thursday evening over most of these ABC stations. And his father-in-law is a domineering gent whose aim in life seems to be to keep Willie happy with his presence. The family frenzy started not too long ago when Willie's father-in-law carried him over the threshold, and Willie protestingly peeped, "Gee, I wish I had a mother-in-law." In short, Willie is a grocery clerk by trade, a husband by intention, and a son-in-law by circumstance. Don't miss the Willie Piper Show.
Well, we might not have Willie Piper later on tonight, but we have a number of other great offerings, including Duffy's Tavern right around the next corner. That was The Challenge of the Yukon with a story called Balmy Bill from May 2nd, 1946. And in just a moment, the results of our Name That Sound contest as old-time radio drama continues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Al Johnson Swedish Restaurant Sister Bay, offering Door County visitors cuisine from Swedish pancakes to Scandinavian dinner specialties. Al Johnson's a Door County tradition since 1949, on the web at aljohnsons.com.
Now, to the results of our Name That Sound contest. Here's the sound again. A fairly difficult one, apparently, but we did have several people who guessed correctly that it was some kind of Tupperware-like vessel being opened and closed. And among them was Sarah of La Crosse, who is our winner tonight. Congratulations. Call back and claim your prize, your old-time Radio Night t-shirt. 2007 edition. It's all about culture, and Archie just can't seem to get enough of it, however imperfectly he might absorb it. That's the case tonight when Archie's been to the opera where he met Ed Wynn, one of the great comedians of the day, and decides that it's time for opera night with Ed Wynn. This is Duffy's Tavern from May 25th, 1949.
Myers, makers of Mom, the safer deodorant, and Vitalis for well-groomed hair, bring you Duffy's Tavern transcribed with our guest tonight, Ed Wynn, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where do you leave me to eat? Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Where was I last night? I went to the opera. Yes, the opera, you know, Misery with the French Horns. Yeah, Duffy, there's two kinds of people that go to the opera, you know. There's them that goes because they think it's the thing to do, and then there's their husbands. Yeah. Then there's the type that goes just, they go just because they get free tickets. Yes, I had a very good seat. In fact, for opera, it was the best kind. Yeah, I was behind a post in the last row. And guess who I met there? He's coming down here tonight. Ed Wynn. Wynn, Duffy. As if in, if you're married, you can't. Huh? Who is he? He's one of those lowbrow comedians. Yeah, you know, the kind that gets laughs. You can't place him? Oh, look, Duffy, remember in the old days when you turned on the radio and you used to get a lot of static? Well, if the static giggled, it was Wynn. Yeah. Well, look, Duffy, I think we've had enough fun for one nickel. I'll call you back.
Hey, Miss Archie, how'd you like the opera last night?
The opera? Well, Eddie, it was sort of in between.
In between?
Yeah, too loud for sleeping and too soft for snoring.
How'd you happen to go?
What do you mean, how did I happen to go?
Well, when you left here, you was cold sober.
Well, I thought I told you. You know, I had an Annie Oakley. You know that Senor Vermicelli from the opera company?
Yeah.
Well, I waited on him the other day, and he asked me if I liked opera, and before I had a chance to answer, he gave me a free ticket.
Well, with the kind of service you give people, you deserved it. So, yeah, didn't you like nothing about the opera?
Well, just one thing.
What?
The blonde sitting next to me. me and... Well, anyway, we had quite a literary discussion about music. And somehow I happened to mention about the opera that I wrote.
The opera you wrote?
You seem aghasted.
You ain't never told me you wrote an opera?
Well, Eddie, I don't tell you everything. Like, for instance, I didn't tell you that I took a bath last week.
Did you?
Well, no, I'm just using it as an example.
You write an opera.
Why not? Some guys shoot pool, some guys go out with dames. I happen to write operas. And mine is one that the people will be able to understand, too. Now, take last night. There was a lot of suffering going on, you know, but nobody knew why. With my opera, it's going to be different.
You're so right.
As I say, why is it that people enjoy an opera on the radio so much, Eddie?
Why?
A very good question. The reason is, it's because Milton J. Cross keeps interrupting, you see. He makes everything clear, and that's what gave me the idea for my opera. I wrote one with a built-in commentator.
Well, who's going to be this commentator?
Ed Wynn. I'm going to try the opera out here tonight, and Ed Wynn will do the commentating. And, Eddie, this opera can't miss. I can see it already. It's opening night. Me name is up in lights. Limousines driving up. Ladies with evening gowns. Men with tails. Well, hello, Finnegan.
What's it doing?
Writing an opera.
Oh. Is it tough to write an opera?
Oh, not at all.
How does it work?
Simple as ABC.
Oh, yeah? How does that work?
Well, Finnegan, to write operas, you got to visualize. You know, for a stupid guy, you got a very intelligent face.
Well, thanks, Art.
Yeah. I'm sure that if you had been born with a forehead, it would have been a high one. Well, as I say, you got to visualize the thing as a whole.
In the head?
In your case, yes.
Yeah.
Now, as I say, if you visualize the...
What's that word again, Art?
Visualize.
Do you mind if I ask you a pertinent question?
Go ahead.
What's the meaning of the word pertinent?
Finnegan, I'd answer that question, but I fail to see where it is irrelevant.
Thanks, Arch. I think that covers it.
Hey, Archie. Did I hear that you wrote an opera?
Yeah, that's right.
And you're going to put it on here tonight?
Why not?
Should I tell him?
Look, Miss Duffy, just because you studied singing with that broken-down Yashapanya Slavnik...
Broken down?
You heard me. Broken down.
Archie, I'll have you know that Yashapanya Slavnik is a very high-priced teacher.
How much does he charge?
$15 a lesson.
$15 a lesson?
Yeah. Of course, if you pay cash, there's a discount.
How much is it then?
20 cents. Of course, to get the discount, you have to bring your own piano.
Well, naturally. But even Miss Duffy, at 20 cents, I think the guy is still robbing you.
Oh, yeah? Yasha says that I'm his most promising pupil.
He does, huh?
Yeah. And believe me, that's quite a compliment coming from a man who once shook hands with Nick Lucas.
Well, maybe we can use you tonight.
As a singer?
Certainly not as a showgirl. Now get in the back room and start practicing.
Why do I have to practice?
I would like my opera singers to practice what they screech. Now let me see. Who else could we get to sing the other part?
Say, Arch, Eddie tells me you're putting on an opera tonight.
That's right, Joe.
Do you need a singer?
Everybody wants to get into the act. Yeah, Joe, we need a singer. You want to audition me?
Okay. Rito Pagliaccio. Singers run in my family, you know.
I can see why. Joe, maybe you better stick to singing the praises of Vitalis, huh?
Well, naturally, that I do with more enthusiasm.
Well, tell me why, Joe, in so many words.
Because Vitalis keeps your hair well groomed. Vitalis tames down dry, unruly hair and helps hair that's been dried out by sun, wind, and water. Why, no other hair preparation can give your scalp and hair better protection than Vitalis and the 60-second workout. For the Vitalis formula contains two of the same ingredients that many skin specialists prescribe for dry, flaky scalps, plus all the other extras that make your hair more handsome, more healthy-looking. So try the Vitalis 60-second workout. Let it prevent scalp and hair dryness, rout flaky dandruff, and give you the best-looking, healthiest-looking head of hair you ever have. You'll look your best tomorrow if you get a bottle of Vitalis today.
Well, Eddie, I got the opera finished.
That's nice.
What you gonna call this masterpiece?
Well, I was thinking of calling it, Carmen.
That's a tricky little name.
Thank you. It don't make sense, of course, but it has a nice operatic feel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me just polish this thing a little now. This half note here, I think I'll change that to a quarter note. In case a little dame sings it, you know. Now, this minor fifth, I think I'll make that a demented fourth. Yeah, that's a lot better. Now, let's see.
Hey, Arch, that guy that just come in.
Yeah?
He looks like an idiot.
Finnegan, that's Ed Wynn.
Hello, Archie.
Finnegan, I think you was right.
You know, I hope I'm awfully late, Archie.
You hope you're late? Why?
Well, my face joke depends on it. I thought that was clever when I put that in there. I had an awful time getting here, Archie. I had an awful time, really.
Yeah? Well, didn't you take the number 8 bus like I told you?
The number 8 bus?
Yeah.
For heaven's sake, no. I came the hard way. 2 4s.
Hey, that's a very funny joke. Well, Mr. Wynn, I'm glad you came down here tonight. You see, I got a little proposition.
You know, that reminds me of a joke.
What's the joke?
Well, it's the joke. I think you'll enjoy this, you know.
Yeah?
It's the joke about the fellow who brought a girl home to the girl's father.
Uh-huh.
See? Now, you gotta follow this. Uh-huh. So the father says to the boy, says, "What have you done to my daughter? Look at her. She's all suntanned." When you hear this? So the fellow says to the girl's father, he said, "Well, I took her to the beach." And the father says, "You did, eh? Will you leave this house and never darken my daughter again?" Did you get that? What a good joke.
Well, anyway, you see, I was to the opera last night. And...
did I ever tell you the joke about the man who had only 2 teeth, Archie?
2 teeth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man had 2 teeth. One in his upper jaw and one in his lower jaw.
Uh-huh.
Very funny. One day, the tooth in the lower jaw said to the tooth in the upper jaw that we ought to get together for lunch sometime. I'm kidding. You know that's good.
Well, Mr. Wynn, as I was saying, I went to the opera last night.
Oh, that reminds me, you know. Archie, I'm in quite a predicament.
A predicament?
Yes, I've been having trouble with my stomach, and the doctor told me to diet. But he didn't tell me what color, you know.
I can see I'm in a bit of a predicament myself.
Yeah?
You see, I went to the opera last night.
Oh, that reminds me of another one. Just what you said. Do you like food, Archie?
Wouldn't sit down to a meal without it.
That sounds funnier than anything I've said so far. Well, I'm glad you like food anyhow, Archie. If you want a wonderful dinner, I want you to take down this recipe. Will you do that?
Okay.
Well, now, first, you take a large takey and you clean the takey very carefully.
Uh-huh.
Then you take a goose, which is a little smaller than the takey, and you place the goose inside of the takey. Now, inside the goose, you place a little duck. Then inside the duck, you put a chicken, and in the chicken, you put a squab. What a dish that is. Inside the squab, you put an olive, you see?
An olive?
Yeah. Then you cook the whole thing for about 3 hours, and it's wonderful.
Really?
Oh, yes. Cooked that way, an olive is simply delicious.
I imagine the part around the wishbone must be great. But as I was saying, Mr. Wynn, you see, the trouble with opera is that the people don't understand it, you
Archie,
see.
Last week I took my girl to the opera, Archie. What do you think happened?
What?
Well, you'll enjoy this. I keep laughing because I love life, you know, Archie. I'll tell you the whole story. I took my girl to see the opera, got a Dameron, you know?
Watch your language, please.
Oh, I... We're making this up, you know, as we go along. So far,
surprise,
ahead of me.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Shall we start the whole thing over again?
No. Take it from the Goddard Dameron.
All right. Anyhow,
what happened?
I took my girl to the opera, got a Dameron, and I didn't hear one word of the opera, Archie.
No?
She talked and talked and talked all through the opera. I didn't hear any of the overture. I didn't hear any of the singing. Even after the opera, she kept talking. I heard none of the opera, got a Dameron. And last night, she called me up again, and she asked me would I like to take her to the opera, this time for Rigoletto. Do you know what I said? I said, I'd love to take you. I've never heard you in Rigoletto.
Well, Mr. Wynn, as I was saying, I went to the opera last night and decided that people don't understand opera, so I wrote myself with a commentator, and I want you to be the commentator.
Well, why didn't you just say so before?
Well, I tried to, but you seem to have a slight impediment in my speech. What, will you do it?
Oh, well, I'd love to do it. You know what I'll do, Archie? I'll go out and put on my opera clothes. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, Miss Archie, this opera, I mean, this Carmen. Yes?
This, Mr. Wynn, is he the gentleman that's going to make it clear?
Yes. he's going to do sort of a commentary. Hey, a commentary? Guess I'm pretty good with the jokes myself. I must send that one into the Reader's Digest.
Well, I hope they got a reader that can digest it.
This is something personal. It's something that both men and women should be aware of, and that's your own freshness and charm. Trust Mum for that. M-U-M. Mum. For Mum is the underarm deodorant with a unique cream formula that protects freshness all day, all evening. It's smoothed on in a jiffy. It's gentle. It's safer. Because it contains no harsh or irritating ingredients, Mum is safer for skin, for clothes, and most important, for your charm. So remember, after every bath and before every date, smooth on Mum. For you see, your bath washes away the past, but Mum safeguards the future. And because Mum is so effective, you will never experience that left-out feeling. Really, personal daintiness can play a most important role in your future, in business as well as romance. Don't neglect it. So if you want to be sure you're nice to be near, depend on Mum. M-U-M. Mum.
Now, look, Finnegan. Yeah? When Mr. Wynn is finished with the commentation, I want you to holler, bravo.
Bravo? What's that?
It's an operatic term, like in baseball you say, kill the umpire. But we better get going with Carmen. Mr. Melnick, we're all ready to start the opera. Now, if there's anything that confuses you, Mr. Wynn has some program notes and will be very happy to add to the confusion.
Well, as the curtain goes up, we find ourselves in scene one.
I think that's odd.
Now, scene one is a cigarette factory. We know it is a cigarette factory because there are doctors walking in and out of the building. Now, suddenly Carmen appears, and she works in the cigarette factory. She's a young girl still in her nicotine. Now, Carmen is very popular. She has hundreds of boyfriends, and she gives each one of them a lock of her hair. Carmen, or as her friends call her, Baldy, she is dressed in very gay colors. She is wearing a yellow blouse and a checkered skirt, and as she walks down the street, men whistle at her. They think she's a taxicab, you know. Carmen enjoys this little game and keeps her motor running. I think that's very subtle. That's at this point, our hero, who is Don Jose, he enters. Don Jose speaks to Carmen.
Well, mi petite cucaracha. Chili Billy Bean.
Who are you, senor?
I am Don Jose, a gay caballero and hungry about town.
Wait. You are not Don Jose, the great lover.
You see this badge?
What does he say?
Somali inspector.
In Spain, this is a very big joke. At this point, Carmen discloses that she is Carmen, and Don Jose discloses that he is Don Jose. Or is it the other way around? Well, it doesn't matter, just as long as it's clear. Anyway, Carmen and Don Jose sing a duet.
I am Carmen, and I'm no prude.
What a hunk of punkitude. Mr. Wynn, in case we have some dopes here, perhaps you better explain the word punkitude.
Punkitude?
Yes.
Well, that means that Carmen is beautiful. Mm-hmm. You see, that's the idea of punkitude. Of course, I don't like to be catty, but a great deal of her beauty is due to makeup, you know. In fact, Carmen wears so much makeup that if you want to kiss her, you have to drill for it, you know. Anyway, in the next scene, we see Carmen sitting on a park bench. Don Jose sneaks up behind her and puts his hands over her eyes. Both of his hands. Then he whispers in her ear. He says, Carmen, do you love me? And she says, of course I love you. Who are you? This makes Don Jose suspicious. Our next scene is the public square. The square speaks.
Buenos Aires.
Who are you, pig?
I am your head driver. I am Don Schlemilio.
You are Don Schlemilio?
Yes.
I am Don Jose.
And I am Don Carmen.
I love Carmen.
And I love Carmen.
And I love Carmen.
You love Carmen?
Yes.
Once again, the infernal triangle.
I love her, and he loves she.
If he loves her, then I hate he.
He loves me.
And so does he.
This makes it fun for love to me.
Oh, I hate you.
And I hate you.
But I hate you more than you hate me.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do. We hate each other with a love of
truth. By now, Don Jose and Don Familio hate each other. And the audience is in a pretty nasty mood, too. Well, anyhow, in the next act, a complete year has passed, and Carmen has gotten quite heavy. But Don Jose does not care. He still worships the very ground she sinks into.
Senorita Carmen.
Da.
Carmen, can you ever forget that night in Madrid?
Sure. What's it worth to you?
Azusa, Carmen, why is it you are so mean to me?
It's because I hate you.
Stromboli. Then why for you go out with me?
It's because I love supper.
Then, Carmen, marry me. Carmen, I love you. Will you marry me?
I will marry no one. I am fancy free.
But I cannot live without your love. I am a lost little dove.
Ha, 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 ha. You met our fool. The one I love is me.
No. It's a wonderful opera, this is. In the next act, it is the day of the big bullfight. Now, there is much excitement, and everybody is having a good time. We even hear the vendors walking up and down through the arena.
Get your head hot. Bull burgers, yeah? Get the bull burgers, yeah?
Well, there is much excitement, and the toreadors are having a good time. And now the bullfight starts. Dutch Familio faces the bull. He is a ferocious beast, and his nostrils quiver as he paws the ground. And the bull is pretty tough, too. But Dutch Familio and the bull stare at each other. They cannot decide who will make the face move, so the bull tosses him for it. You think that needs repetition or something? There was a lull there. The bull tosses him for it. I want to send that to some other comedian. All right. In the meantime... we're still talking about Carmen.
Okay.
In the meantime, Don Jose has proposed to Carmen again. This enrages Carmen, so she kills Don Jose. This gives Familio an idea, and he kills Carmen. Not to be outdone, Don Jose gets up and kills Familio. And as the three of them lie there on the stage waiting for the Undertaker, they speak.
And now I feel I must drop dead.
Drop dead.
I feel that we can never wed.
Drop dead.
The time has come when I must die.
Go, 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 go.
Time now to
drop dead.
Drop dead.
Drop dead.
Drop dead.
Mr. Wynn,
Mr. Wynn, I think you should explain that last part to the audience.
Archie, I've listened to this opera for 10 minutes now.
Yeah?
I think you should explain the last part to the audience.
What do you mean?
Drop dead.
Mister, we're sure of it. Try just one tube of Benex Brushless Shave Cream, and we're sure you'll use Benex for life.
Yes, we're certain that Benex, B-E-N-E-X, will give you the best shaves you've ever had.
Benex gives extra easy shaves, thanks to a special beard-softening formula.
Benex is extra smooth, lighter, so different it rinses off your razor instantly.
Benex gives you extra comfort. A special after-shaving action leaves your face feeling wonderful.
Just try Benex. See for yourself. That's Benex, B-E-N-E-X. Benex Brushless Shave, at your nearest drug counter. Get Benex tomorrow.
Why do you suppose there's so many people all over the world waiting to come to America? Sure, you know the reason. It's freedom. Freedom, the most wonderful word in the world and our most precious possession. Unfortunately, so many of us take freedom for granted. There are millions of people in the world who would give anything to be able to do something you do every day without thinking about it. I mean a simple thing like listening to news on the radio. We hear news without distortion of facts. Few people in other countries do. And this is only one of a long list of freedoms we Americans enjoy. But we must work to keep our precious freedoms. Work at being a good citizen by voting, by keeping informed, making our opinions known, and resisting all attacks on our political and religious rights. We must all do it, for freedom is everybody's job. Stavern for this evening, but let's meet here again at the same time next Wednesday. Duffy Stavern Transcribed is brought to you by Mum, the safer deodorant, and by Talus for well-groomed hair. Each Wednesday, Bristol Myers brings you Duffy's Tavern and Mr. District Attorney, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
A visit to Duffy's Tavern with Opera Night with Ed Wynn. And our show came from May 25th, 1949. I suppose the best that can be said is that, well, Carmen survived. If not the character, at least the opera. Next up, speaking of characters, the Damon Runyon Theater. As old-time radio drama continues, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.